All right, can you guys hear? All right, great. Welcome to Building HTTP Services with ASP.NET Web API. My name is Syed Hashimi. I'm a program manager on the Visual Studio web team. I've got my contact information on the screen to my right. You can reach me on Twitter or email or by my blog. At the end of the session, we will have a dedicated Q&A. But if you've got any questions during the session, feel free to tweet them to me. Don't worry about having to remember my Twitter name. I'll keep the name at the bottom right-hand corner of all the slides, so then you can just tweet me whatever questions that you might have. Today, we're going to be talking about three things. We're going to talk about what is a web API. And then we'll talk about why it's likely that you're interested in creating one. And then we'll talk about how can you use ASP.NET Web API to create these HTTP services. Okay, so what is a Web API? A Web API is an HTTP service. You would use it to expose data and or functionality over the HTTP protocol. Now, you'll use the HTTP protocol when you're trying to reach a lot of different form factors and different devices, such as websites, phones, tablets, televisions, refrigerators, etc. HTTP is a really great protocol for that because on all these different platforms, the odds that there is an HTTP client is very good. And HTTP is an application-level protocol as opposed to a transport protocol. So one example of when HTTP is used as a transport protocol is web services. So when you have a web service, you'll have a SOAP envelope that's contained inside the body of the HTTP message. And then within that body, you have the action which is specified that the server should implement or should execute. But with HTTP, all of our actions are actually specified in the HTTP method itself. So you can understand what is the intent of an HTTP request simply by examining the headers. You don't have to understand the content that it actually contains. Because I can look at the HTTP method and say, okay, this request is trying to retrieve some information, or it's trying to create a new resource, or update a resource, so on and so forth. So that's how you'll use HTTP as an application protocol. Okay, so why would you be interested in creating a web API? There's actually recently been a lot more interest in creating web APIs, and I think that's for three reasons. The first reason is you have to have broad reach. Nowadays, if you create a website, I'm sure a lot of you have been in the situation where you've created the site, published it, and then your boss comes over to you the next day, says, hey, the website is awesome, I really love the functionality, but how can we bring that into a phone or into a tablet? So that's a really great opportunity for HTTP because you know all those platforms will have clients ready for you. The second reason, and this is some example of those clients, the second reason being scale. So nowadays you have to make sure that you create your applications in such a way that when you receive more demand, that your applications are able to scale along with the demand that is placed on it. Fundamentally, there's two aspects to scale. You have to have a scalable infrastructure, and that's where you have cloud service providers such as Azure that will enable you to scale the infrastructure itself. And then on top of that, you need a scalable architecture. So we know that HTTP as an architecture, or REST as an architecture, is very scalable. The web has proven that for us. So if we use and create HTTP services in the way that they were intended to be created, then we can leverage all the caches and intermediaries that HTTP has to leverage that to enable your applications to scale. All right? And the third reason is to just kind of, you know, there's been a move towards simplifying things and embracing HTTP. So if your application can function by just using HTTP itself, then we should go at that. We shouldn't have to create protocols on top of HTTP because you never know if a client for that protocol will be available or not. So that's the third reason why I think that web APIs are becoming more interesting. All right, so now I will show you what a typical web API application may look like. All right, so let me cancel out of that. All right, so this is a contact manager application. You just go ahead and run this. So I'll do F5. All right, cool. All right, so this is a contact manager. Right now it's actually doing an HTTP GET back to a web API to get my list of contacts. This application was created with MVC 4, but all the views are actually implemented in Knockout.js, and it uses web API to interact with all the data that we have. So now let me show you an example here. So I can create a new contact. I'll go ahead and add myself. Okay, 1, 2, 3, and go ahead and save that. Actually, I set a breakpoint, but I'll go ahead and pass through that. Okay, so now we can see my contact has been created with the appropriate street. Okay, so let's take a look at the view, which is behind this. So now if I go to my views folder, and then home, and then index, we'll take a look here. All right, cool. All right, so we can see that we're setting up Knockout.js here, and then we're calling post to actually create a new contact, and then we'll use the HTTP delete verb to actually delete, and then this is the call that actually does the get to get the list of contacts. So now, I've got a Windows Phone app here as well. Let me load that up. And I'll go ahead and run this, and we'll take a look if it gets the latest version or not of the data. Let me just drag it onto the screen here. So the resolution is not ideal for the emulator. I apologize for that. So now it's doing an HTTP GET. Oh, actually, it's just initializing the app. And here's my contact manager. Now it's performing the HTTP GET. And if I scroll it, we can see Syed Hashimi has been added. And what I'll do is I'll go back. Unfortunately, I can't get to the back button. Let me just close it out. I'll delete an item there and then relaunch it and then go from there. Okay. All right, so let me go ahead and remove myself again, and then I'll relaunch the application. That way you guys know that it is actually calling the HTTP endpoint. All right, so the emulator is coming up. Then we can go here and launch the app again, and we'll take a look for to make sure that my contact was successfully deleted. All right, so it just ends with Daniel Roth. So this is kind of one example of how I can take the same data and functionality and expose it on two totally different form factors. All right, cool. So now with that, what I'm going to do now is show you guys in the F12 tools for IE, what are all the HTTP requests that are going back and forth? So if you're familiar with the F12 tools, you might know that they have a network capturing feature. So let me recreate the same contact, which I just deleted. So I did a save. And then if I zoom in, let me run my zoom it tool here real fast. Okay, so now zoom in should work. Okay, cool. All right, so if I zoom in, we can see that the URI that it contacted was API/contacts, and a post was sent to it. So post is the HTTP method that is used when you want to create a new resource at the URI in question. Let me actually perform a remove. If I perform a remove, we can see that the HTTP method is delete. So this is really the way that HTTP was designed to be used. All right, cool. So one other aspect when you're creating your web APIs, web APIs are not limited to just returning text, JSON, XML, you can actually return binary formats and other formats as well. For instance, I just clicked on the image button for the contact, and we can see that the request is going through the web API that was created, or that we've got created here. All right. So that was that. Let me switch back to the slides. All right. So that was the demo of a contact manager application. Let's talk a little bit about what were the guiding principles that we used when we created Web API. So one of the first goals that we had was to make sure that you guys had a first-class modern HTTP programming model. You'd had full access to the HTTP request and the HTTP response. You'd be able to do anything that you thought was interesting with HTTP, set status code, headers, content negotiation, so on and so forth. Another goal that we had was to make sure that it's very easy for you to map URIs using the HTTP uniform interface to the resources which you create. And we also wanted to make sure that we had great support for the content negotiation that is built into HTTP itself, and then made it really easy for you guys to support your custom formats. We saw a custom format here with the PNG. We'll also take a look at a vCard format as well. And we also wanted to make sure that it's very easy to separate out cross-cutting concerns such as validation or authentication and authorization. The actions for your web APIs really should be able to focus on the business logic that they were intended to implement, as opposed to having to worry about all these things going on around them. So we use ASP.NET filters for that, and I'll go into that a little bit later on. One of the other goals that we set out was to make sure that the framework was lightweight, testable, and scalable. We actually took a lot of that from the ASP.NET MVC. We'll also talk about what is the relationship with ASP.NET MVC and web APIs. So if you've been following our web API stack for several years, you might know that, hey, this is not our first time that we're trying to create a web API framework. If you're familiar with ASP.NET MVC, you know that you can create an action that returns a JSON result. So it's very easy to create a simple web API that will just return JSON. Going anywhere past that, if you want to set custom headers or different status codes, was really kind of left up to you. And it was not necessarily the easiest things to do through ASP.NET MVC. On the WCF side of the house, we had WCF Web HTTP, which was kind of our first time really getting into web APIs, and that was back in the 3.5 days. We introduced URI templates there, and we had a binding which would allow you to return raw HTTP through WCF. And then after that, we had the WCF REST Starter Kit. So that took a lot of the ideas from Web HTTP and then kind of took it a step further. And from here, a lot of the items in the WCF REST Starter Kit, which I'm sure a lot of you guys have used in the past, a lot of those ideas actually made its way into .NET 4 itself and then are readily available in .NET 4. So then, after that, we created WCF Web API, which took all the ideas that we had in the REST Starter Kit and then kind of took them to the next level. So, for example, we had formatters, content negotiation was supported in a first-class way there for the first time. We created handlers for cross-cutting concerns. And but what we learned was that, you know, if you look at WCF, WCF is really designed as a SOAP stack. And serving raw HTTP through WCF is very, let's just say, tricky. It's very difficult to do, and it kind of feels like you're taking a square peg and putting it into a round hole. So we took a step back, and we said, hey, how can we make the story simpler for not only ourselves, but also for customers? So what we've decided to do is actually merge ASP.NET and WCF. Not only the technologies have merged, but actually the teams have now merged. So we're one big happy family now. So it's ASP.NET and WCF. We're all in one group. And from that came ASP.NET Web API. Now, if you're using all the WCF items that we had before, and if you have a lot of WCF infrastructure that's already in place, it might make sense for you to create an HTTP endpoint and just continue on with WCF. But for the vast majority of scenarios, if you're creating an HTTP service, you should be using ASP.NET Web API. All right. So now we can take a look, what are the features that we've taken from ASP.NET MVC, and then what are the features that we've taken from WCF Web API to become ASP.NET Web API. So MVC had a really great routing mechanism for matching your routes to your action, to your controller action methods. We decided to go ahead and keep that mechanism. It's very easy to create ASP.NET Web API routes if you're familiar with creating MVC routes. In MVC, when you create a route, you'll say map route, but with Web API, you'll call map HTTP route. We decided to keep model binding from MVC. So model binding is the concept of taking the request and then extracting out the data that's in the request and then passing that as parameters to your action methods. We also decided to keep the validation that ASP.NET has, so you can decorate your model with validations from the system.componentModel.dataAnnotations namespace, and you can also create your own custom validators if you need. We kept filters for cross-cutting concerns. We kept the ability to easily generate links pointing to resources. We kept the testability that ASP.NET MVC had. MVC also had really great integration with IOC containers, so we inherited that. And finally, MVC has great tooling inside Visual Studio in the form of templates and scaffolding. I'll show you guys a little bit of that later on in the session. So from the WCF side of the house, we had a modern HTTP programming model, which we've kept. We've kept the HTTP client that was there. It's always been async task-based. That's what enables Web API to really be scalable itself. And then we hope that since everything that we create is async, that it actually causes you to create async implementations as well, which will cause those to be scalable. We've kept the support for the formatting and the first class support for content negotiation. We also have an ability to use API explorers to create custom help documentation or testers, and also the ability for self-hosting. So you can host ASP.NET Web API outside of the context of ASP.NET. And then we've kept the tracing support. One item that I didn't mention here is the OData support that we have. All right, so how do you get the bits? So you can get the bits from ASP.NET/Web API. To download Web API, you actually will just download and install ASP.NET MVC 4. Web API is a part of MVC 4. Also, on this site, you'll find our tutorials, videos, samples, and we've also got forums here. So if you have any questions regarding Web API or ASP.NET in general, feel free to go to the forums and ask a question. Our team does monitor these forums actively, so that's a great resource for you guys to tap into. All right. So we're also open source. You can get the code at aspnetwebstack.codeplex.com. We are accepting third-party contributions. One example of a third-party contribution that came in was for MVC. Someone implemented the HTTP, the support for the HTTP methods patch and options. If there's anybody in this room that contributed, thank you for that. And if you guys are interested in contributing, feel free to go to this website. We're kind of locking down our release right now, so you might not make it in time for RTM, but we are out of band and we plan on updating these bits every few months. So you might see your contribution in a few months. The license that we have is the Apache V2 license. And one other cool aspect of this is that it gives you an incredible level of transparency for what our team is actually doing. When our developers check in code into the repository, they are checking in to the same Git repository that is online. So all the comments that they make and all the change sets that they submit will show up directly inside that CodePlex repository. All right, so now let's see, what would it take to create our first web API? All right, so now I'll stop debugging this, and then I'll create a new project. All right, so I'll say file new project. As we said, Web API is built in with ASP.NET 4, MVC 4. Let's say Web API. All right, cool. All right, so I'll go ahead and create new. If you've got existing web forms projects, don't worry. You can right-click and say add Web API as a item template, and then that'll bring in everything that we need. So here, what I'll do is I'll select Web API. And actually, let me try to... Okay, looks like the page is scrolling. Okay, all right, so I'll select Web API. For anybody that was playing around with the beta bits, you might have noticed that there's a SPA template that's missing here, single page application. That template was actually built on top of Web API. We decided that it wasn't ready to be released, so we removed the template. We are still working on that. It's in our CodePlex repository. It will not make it for RTM, but it will make it in some update some number of months after that. If you're interested in taking a look, then just keep an eye out on our repository. So now it's creating the project. It's actually adding a number of NuGet packages to my project right now. This also is another change in Visual Studio 2012. So if you looked at how your projects get created in 2010, they're all a bunch of static content, which makes up the project template. So, for example, you might have created a new project in 2010 and then noticed that the version of jQuery was far outdated. So now what we're doing is, from our project templates, when you do file new project, we actually will install a bunch of NuGet packages which will contain the latest version of all those items. Are you guys familiar with NuGet? All right, we've got a number of people that are, but I think some are not. So what I'll do is let me show you guys NuGet real quick. So I'll right-click and then say Manage NuGet Packages. So NuGet is our package manager for .NET. You can check it out on NuGet.org. And here's all the packages which are available right now. There's thousands of packages available, and there's been millions of downloads. And here we can see that Entity Framework is here, and jQuery are pulled in for this project. So that's NuGet. All right, so now we'll see that if I take a look at this values controller, let me actually just collapse the definition first. We can see that the controller is created, and it extends from API controller. So if you're an MVC developer, this should look a little bit familiar. The only significant difference here is that you're extending API controller instead of the MVC controller base that they have. Another difference here is that the action names are actually the same names as the HTTP methods. The naming convention that we have is the HTTP method will be the prefix. And then that's how we actually would map a particular URI to an action method inside your Web API controller. So if a HTTP GET request came in, it could map to either this GET or this GET here based on your routing. So if I had a GET request that came in with API/values, it would go here. And then if I had a request that came in with an ID, it would get this one instead. And then we've also got post, put, and delete. So let's take a look at this get method. So inside this get method, we return a hard-coded value. And then inside the default one, we just return a list. So let me go ahead and F5 this. All right, where are we at? All right, so you can see that when you create a new web API project, you'll get just a sample page that kind of points out what is web API and how to get started. But what I can do now is, let me take a look at how can I access my route. So based on this comment, I know it should be API values, but how did it get to that point? So if I go and look at app start route config, here's where your routes will be configured. We can see we've got map route. This is for MVC, and that's your standard MVC route that you have. And then map HTTP route is for web API, and we can see that any request that starts with API will be routed through here, and it expects a, we've got a path segment here for controller, and that will, in this case, be values, and then an optional parameter for ID. So this is your default route that's created for you. So based on that, I know I should go to API, values, and then let's take a look. Go ahead and open this file up. Now it's asking me for what program do I want to open it, so I'll say Notepad, and then open. All right, we can see we've got value 1 and value 2 in an array as expected, and this is coming back as JSON. Now let me go to API/values/1. All right, so if I open that and Notepad again, then we'll take a look at the result, and this result here is just the hard-coded value for value that we had. All right, so while that's going on, let me also open Fiddler. So Fiddler is a great tool to debug HTTP traffic. So if you're creating HTTP services, Fiddler is definitely a very useful tool. So now I've got Fiddler up. Let me actually make a HTTP request. Just 1 second. All right, so yeah, might as well go back to that. Okay, cool. So I can take a look here. So we've got the 200 success. And then if I take a look at the result, it's coming back as JSON. Let me look at the raw result here. So here's your JSON value that had came through. And then, all right, so now if I, let me show you the support that we have for the content negotiation. All right, so here what I'm going to do is modify my request to where I specify that I'm the zooming doesn't work for this for some reason. All right, so I apologize. The zooming doesn't work on this screen for some reason. So here I'm passing in a token that says, hey, I accept application XML. So let me go ahead and send that on out. And then we should take a look at the result. All right, so here, what? Okay, just 1 second. Having some issues here. Application XML. Oh, okay. I've got the wrong URI, so let me grab the correct URI. All right, cool. So actually back that off and do execute. We can see we received a 200, and now I'm receiving XML. So I'm getting angle brackets instead of braces here. So this is the built-in support for content negotiation. All right, so... so that was your first web API. We'll actually get into making some more interesting web APIs as well. But before we do that, let's talk a little bit about what actually just happened there. What did we have to do to implement a web API? So to implement a web API is actually very simple. You need to derive from API controller, and then create your action methods, get, put, post, update, delete. not update, sorry. And then you have to map your HTTP methods using the ASP.NET routing to those particular actions. And we already said that our convention is that the HTTP method should be the prefix for the method name in your API controllers. But if you want to use any other naming convention, or if you wanted to have more of an RPC style service, then you can always use the HTTP attributes to override that default behavior. But I prefer the default behavior, so I'll keep it with what I have. We already talked a little bit about how can you create the URI space for your application using ASP.NET routing. Here's the default route, which we've already talked a little bit about. Action parameters. So you might be wondering, how do we take information from the request and then feed it in through parameters to all of your action methods? So that is what's called model binding. And we actually use two methods. For simple types, we will take the actions directly from the URI. So a simple type is anything like a string or a number, anything that's very easily convertible into back and forth from a string. For complex types, we'll take the values from the body and then use the formatters in order to create those objects and then pass them into your controllers. The default formats that we accept for a request is JSON, XML, and form URL encoding. If you have to override where a particular value comes from, whether it be the URI or from the body, you can attribute your action methods with that. And you can also create custom model binders in a very similar way as you did with MVC, and then you can use the model binder attribute for that. All right, so how does validation work with ASP.NET Web API? So validation is run on every request. The errors and messages will be queued up inside the model state object. And inside your action methods, you can check the isValid property on the model state to find out what is the current status of the request that it has been received. And you can also create your own custom validation logic by creating your custom validators. All right, so that was that. Let's talk a little bit about content negotiation. So content negotiation is a concept that's built into HTTP. We've already seen kind of an example of that. So when a request comes in, it can have an additional header that says, hey, I accept certain formats, and it can just be a list of whatever formats that it accepts. And then when the server is creating the response for that, it will examine those accept headers and then decide what's the most appropriate format that actually should be sent back to the client, and then he'll specify a content type HTTP header indicating what is the content coming back. And out of the box, we have support for both JSON and XML. Our JSON serialization that's in the box is actually built on top of JSON.NET, which is a very popular third-party JSON serializer. Initially, we were using the JSON serializers that were in the framework, but we noticed that those are kind of moving a little slow. And it would be more appropriate if we used JSON.NET, because that's kind of revving at the speed of the web, so we went with that. All right, so more into content negotiation. You don't have to actually write this code. You could write this code if you want, but I'll show you what is the code you will write to actually replace this. So this is an example of what happens when content negotiation gets kicked in for ASP.NET Web API. So first, we create a content negotiation by calling the configuration service. And then after that, we'll call negotiate on that service, passing in the request and the formatters which have been declared. And then finally, we'll create the HTTP response. And all the content negotiation will actually happen when that response is created. So now we've actually simplified this for you guys into an extension method. So when you're creating your web API actions, instead of writing the code that I just showed you, you can just write request.createResponse, pass it a status code, and then the model. And then it will create the response with the correct format for the client based on that. All right. So now moving on to a demo. So in this demo, I'll show you how can we create a simple contact manager, somewhat like what I had before. I'll use EF code first, and I will actually use the scaffolding features inside Visual Studio to quickly create those. All right, so I'll take my web API sample that I've got, and then I'll create a new model for my contact. So I'll say add class contact, and then start adding some fields to it. Okay, I'll create an ID. This is for Entity Framework. Let's say first name, last name, and then we're good. All right, cool. All right, so that's my model, and then let me go ahead and perform a build, and then after that, I'll right-click on the controllers. But actually, before I do that, what I do is I create a folder under controllers, and then I'll call it APIs, that we can kind of match the naming convention that we have, controllers, images, models, so on and so forth. This isn't really required, it's just a convention that I use to kind of separate out all my MVC controllers and my web API controllers. So I'll say new controller. And then I'll give it contacts controller. Okay, from here, we can see that we have different templating options. So I can create an MVC template, but we can also create API controllers with read-write actions using Entity Framework. So that sounds like something I'm interested in, and it sounds like what I'm trying to do. So I'll go ahead and use that. And then I'll expand out the model class. I'll select contact. And then for data context, if you have any existing data context classes, they will show up here. But you can also create a new data context, which is what I'll do. So here I'll call it contacts context. And then click OK. And then go ahead and click add. So what this is doing, it's actually inspecting my contact model, and then it'll create a web API controller for that, and also it will create an EF code first context that will actually store all the database options. I just realized I misspelled the context, but that's okay. All right, so here's my Entity Framework context. This is basically the exact same code that I would have written if I hand created this. It's a simple EF database context with a DB set for contacts. All right, so now let's take a look at the context controller. Just one second. I'm having mouse issues over here. All right, so here's the context controller. Let me collapse the definition again. So we can see that we've got the context being passed into it. And then we've got those similar method names that we saw before, but in this case it's get contacts, put contacts, post, delete, so on and so forth. So let's take a look at the get contacts method here. So in the previous example for values controller, it was really just returning a hard-coded list. But in this example, it's actually using Entity Framework code first to reach into the database, look up all the contacts, and then return them. All right, so if I take a look at get contact, it's very similar to that. So here's kind of an interesting thing to point out. Let me bring that down onto the next line, that one as well. So in get contact, when an ID is passed into it, it will use EF to try to locate a particular contact with that ID. And if that doesn't exist, then what we do is we throw a new HTTP response exception. Whenever you're inside a action method for a web API controller and you find yourself in an unusual state and you really just want to return an HTTP error code, you can just throw a HTTP response exception, give it the error code that you want passed in, and then what that would do is just it will stop the action from executing and then return the appropriate response. So that's a good convention to follow along. And then we can see my put method, which is designed to make sure to update any existing items. So an HTTP get, so the get method is requesting, hey, I want to retrieve a resource. Put is I want to update a resource. Post is I want to create a new resource. And then delete is you want to delete a resource. So let's take a look at post real quick. So inside post, we can see that he checks the model state. If it's valid, then he'll go ahead and add the new contact, save the changes, and then use request.createResponse to make sure that all the content negotiation kicks in to actually create the response that is sent back to the client. All right, so now let's see if this works. So I'll go ahead and run this. Okay, I'll navigate to API contacts. Okay, click yes. Go ahead and open this in Notepad. We've got an empty response. We haven't actually created any contact. So let me go ahead and create a contact. So one of the drawbacks of using a browser is that you can't update the HTTP methods. So I can't send a post. So let me send a post. Let me make sure that my route 48917. Okay. So I'll say API contacts post. Try to see this. Just one second. This not able to see the. This looks like Fiddler was not designed to be used at this resolution. Let me try to see if I can make it bigger on this screen. Let me try to see what can I do. Okay, we can barely see it there, actually. All right, or not, actually. So what I'll do is move it up. Let me actually make it over here, and then I'll pass it in to you. Actually, let me do it like this. So here's my, we can still kind of see it. So I'll say content type. All right, that's right. Get rid of that. And then I'll go ahead and create the body here, and then I'll show it to you guys real quick. So let me open Notepad, and then I'll create it. So the body should be first name. Okay, so I'm just creating this in JSON. So these are the fields which were identified on my context model. Let me take this, and then I'll paste that into the body here, and then execute the post. I apologize, we can't see the body here. Okay, so I got a 500 server error. I think that. Oh, did I? Okay, so I misspelled application. Okay, all right. All right, so here we go. All right, so we've got a 201, which is a created status code, and then it returns the, if I go to raw, if I take a look here, we can see that it returns the item which was created. And then another thing to take notice of is we have we've got the location header set. So with HTTP, whenever you create an item, whenever you create a new resource, you should return the URI for that resource and the location header, all right, which we've done. So now let me try to go back to IE and then do API slash contacts and then open it again. And then hopefully this time we should see the new contact, which I just created. All right, cool. So now we can see that contact. So basically what we've done is within 1 or 2 minutes, created a web API, that uses a database, connected it to Entity Framework code first, and then it's already got content negotiation for JSON and XML. So how cool is that right there? All right, awesome. So now let's take a look back at our next item here. So we talked about scaffolding, created a simple web API. So now we've got the concept of cross-cutting concerns, and we implement cross-cutting concerns through filters, which is the same exact thing that ASP.NET MVC uses. There are three kinds of filters out there. There's action filters, there's authorization filters, and then there's exception filters. So exception filters are run when your response is being generated, and if there was an unhandled exception that occurred, you could actually take that exception and then create a custom HTTP response for it based on that. Authorization filters are very similar to action filters, except they run before model binding occurs. So if a request comes in that's not authorized, you're not even going to waste the CPU cycles to perform model binding. You can just exit right away. And with action filters, you can extend out your actions. Maybe you would perform your validation inside a custom action or logging and any type of cross-cutting concerns that you might have. These filters can be configured either on the action itself or on the controller or at a global level if you want filters to be executed on every request. All right, so let's take a look at the HTTP dispatcher pipeline. So the HTTP, when a request comes in, we use the HTTP dispatcher to identify what's the particular controller and what's the particular action, and then how do we take the values from the request and then do model binding to pass that in. That's all the responsibility of the HTTP dispatcher. So on the screen to my right, you can see the workflow that's used when a request comes in and then when a request goes out. So we can follow that real quick. So when the request comes in, the HTTP dispatcher examines the route, determines which API controller should be used to service that request. After that, it will actually examine the HTTP method and then figure out from that what is the action method that should be executed. And then your authorization filters kick in. If the request is authorized, then model binding occurs, and then all action filters, and then finally your action is invoked. And then when the response is being generated, we just backpedal, and then after the action and authorization filters are completed, exception filters kick in, and then finally formatting occurs. All right. So now, I mentioned before that we do have some OData support. Currently, we have support for top, skip, order by, and filter. We are working to have better support in the future. We hope that in some of our outer band, we may be able to support more OData operators. So let me show you the OData support that we have. So let me go back to my contact manager sample, the first one that I showed you, and then I'll run this, and then we'll perform some queries on top of this. All right. All right, so here's my contacts, and this will return the full list of contacts that we have. We've already kind of seen this result, but let's take a look at it. So here we've got, actually, let me go to the home page, and then we'll see everybody that's there. Okay, cool. All right, that's good. So this is that same list, basically. So now, if I do, let's say if I want to query to create the top two, so I'll do API/contacts, $$top, equals 2. All right, so this should return only the top two results. Okay, so just the first two. All right, so Glenn and Howard. So if I looked at my other result, those should be the first two that were there. All right, so here's the full set of results, and the top one were Glenn and Howard, as expected. Okay, cool. So let me close out of that. So now, what if I want to take the top two and then, say, order by name? Okay, so here's my order by name. And then we open up the result. All right, so now it ordered by name and then picked off the top two. So if I take a look, it's just formatted by, it's sorted by the first name, so Daniel and Glenn. And yes, that is correct. Okay. All right, so that's cool. So now, what if I wanted to do the same exact thing, but I wanted to skip the first two? So I'll say skip equals two, and then open the result. All right. Oh, actually, let me try that one more time. I opened it in the wrong app. So let's try that again. All right. So here is order by two, skipping. Oops. There we go. All right. So we've got Howard and Jeff. So order by name, skipping two, and then taking the top two. So it's Howard and Jeff, because Daniel and Glenn are gone. Howard and Jeff, and then Yavor was left. All right, so let's take a look at how can you add OData support to your own web API. So what did I have to do to actually implement that? So going back to the sample, so here, let me look at the controller. So context controller, let me minimize this. So I'll go to outline and collapse the definition. Okay, so here's my get method that is serving up all those requests. And you might notice that there's two things that are different than when we initially scaffolded these. The first difference is that I'm returning an iQueryable of T object here. And the second difference is that I've got the queryable attribute. So having these two things will kick off OData support in your own web API projects. All right, so now that was our OData support. So I think we're going to move on to another demo. So that was OData, and then we just demoed all the OData support that we have. All right, so we talked a little bit about the HTTP dispatcher, but you might be wondering what's happening underneath the HTTP dispatcher. How do, you know, when a request comes in and when the response is being generated, what's happening around that HTTP dispatcher? And then also, what's happening on the .NET client side when HTTP client is being used? So we actually have a symmetric programming model for both the server and the client side for web API. I think that's the first time that we have that for .NET. So let's kind of explain on the client side what's happening. When you use HTTP client, it will actually run through a message handler chain to service that request. We have a default message handler, which is HTTP client handler. This will use a web HTTP request to generate your request and then put that over the wire and send it to the server. And then on the server side, we've got some hosting layer that will take the request off the wire. It will generate the HTTP request message and then hand that off to an instance of the HTTP server object. This HTTP server object is somewhat similar to the HTTP client, that it actually will take a request and then just feed that through the message handler chain that it has. And then at the end of this message handler chain is the HTTP dispatcher. So the HTTP dispatcher and even the HTTP server itself are actually message handlers. To create a message handler, it's very simple. You just implement the interface for message handler, and you have a send message. You'll give it the request and a cancellation token, and then go from there. So I will show you how can we unit test our projects, and I'll show you how can we pass in a specific server for HTTP client to override the default server that we have. So that's your that's what's happening underneath HTTP dispatcher. All right, custom URI extensions. So now let me show you. We have kind of a little trick that that we can do inside this Contact Manager app. So if I go to contacts slash one, that will return to me the contact in JSON. We don't have to open it up again. We've already seen it. But if I put an extension here, then it will return to me different formats. So when we talked before, we said that one of the drawbacks of using a browser is that you cannot inject your own custom HTTP headers. So we're actually using this trick to pick up some item that's inside the URI to indicate what formatter should be used. All right, so we've also got some other formatters here. We've got XML. So if I click that, now we can see the XML that comes back. We've also got a VCF. VCF is for vCard. It's a way that you can transmit address book information from one application to another. If I open this, it should open in Outlook. And it did. So here we can see Glenn, and that's your VCF. So let's take a look at how what does it take to actually do the extension trick. All right, so that is handled by a message handler. So inside the message handler, when a request comes in, if there's an extension for XML, JSON, PNG, or VCF, we will actually take that request, and then we'll strip off the headers that came in, and then we'll simply add an accept header with the appropriate media type here. So this is kind of a trick. It's actually a somewhat common trick. And one question that I do receive a lot is, when should I use message handlers versus action filters? So if you need some logic that is executed on every message that comes in, that's when you'll use a message handler. And this actually, they get kicked off very early, even before the HTTP dispatcher gets called. So you have full request, you have full access to the HTTP request. You can go ahead and party on that, make whatever changes you need, and then by the time it gets to the HTTP dispatcher, it doesn't realize that, hey, this other guy kind of intercepted that message and played around with it a little bit. All right, so that's the difference between using those two guys. But while we're there, let's take a look at how did we do the PNG and VCF. All right, so those are what's known as formatters. So you can create whatever formatters you want. They just have to extend a media type formatter. In this case, it's just extending buffered media type formatter. And then, let me actually collapse the definition real quick so we can take a look at everything that's here. We can see that there's a can read type, can write type. So when the formatters are kicked in, they will start asking, say, hey, can you read and write this particular type? If you're only interested in serving one side of it, then you can just do the technique that we have here. So if a contact comes in, he can write it, but he cannot read it because we're not interested in consuming images. We're only interested in serving images over here. So we return false for that method. And then inside the write to stream, what we do is we pick off the ID image from the URI, and then we locate the image, and then simply write that back to the stream. All right, so that's your contact PNG formatter. Let's take a look at the vCard formatter. So actually, if I take a look, the vCard format is actually very simple. Here is where we create this. So it starts with this begin vCard. and then NV card. And then inside of all that are all the contact details. So this is one example of how you can create custom formatters for Web API. All right, so now let me go back to... So now let's talk about Web API descriptions. So previously I said that we have access to use API Explorer to take a look at all of our Web APIs from a runtime perspective and identify all the different HTTP methods that it supports, and then what types do I have to pass into it. So if you're creating clients that leverage HTTP services, probably, for example, let's say if you're consuming the Twitter REST API, you'll probably go to the developer.twitter.com, and then you'll take a look at their sample JSON request that they have, and then probably create a model off that. So you might be wondering, how can I do the same thing when I use ASP.NET Web API? So inside the Contact Manager application, I'll show you how we've actually done this. So if I go back to the home page, on the right-hand side, there's an API link. So I can click this API link, and what that's doing is using the Web API, API Explorer, and examining all the APIs that are being exposed, and then listing them here in a way that I can read it. This is just something that I created earlier. We actually are working on a NuGet package, which everybody can use to create views such as this, but it's going to look a lot better than what I have right now. But here we can see that we've got the get API contacts, and then also we use the formatters to generate sample request messages that come through. So I've got JSON, XML, and then here's the V card. Okay, so that's that. And let me actually minimize that, and then let's take a look at the post. And then we've got from body is where that's expected from. And then the same for XML or form URL encoding if the request comes in. And then here's your samples for XML, PNG, so on and so forth. So you can use those API explorers to generate your own help content. All right, cool. So now, so that was how can we use API Explorer. This is kind of a sample of it. It's pretty basic right now. You just call get API Explorer, and then from that you'll get the API descriptions, and then you can create those views and whatnot, or test clients for them. Custom Web API help page, we just looked at that. Okay, so hosting. So previously we mentioned that you can actually host ASP.NET Web API outside of the context of ASP.NET itself. So those are the two ways that you can host them. And the way that we actually make this very easy for you guys is we use HTTP configuration as the common object which is being passed in, whether it's being hosted through ASP.NET or if you have self-hosting in a console app or a Windows service, or an Azure worker role, so on and so forth. So let me take a look at my contact manager solution. You know, when you're creating web APIs, one of the difficult things to test is the post methods, because with post, you know, a lot is going on. You've got the request coming in, you've got model binding kicking off, validation, authorization. And then you've got formatting happening. There's really a lot of moving parts and, you know, a lot of opportunity for errors. So what I did was I created a test case to test my HTTP post method for the contact manager application. Let me stop that. Let's take a look at, let me do F11. That doesn't work. Okay. I don't think, okay. All right. So here's my contact manager test. So what I'm doing is creating a new instance of HTTP configuration, And then I'm using a static class which I created, web API config, and then passing that configuration object into it. Let's go and look at it. So inside the configure method, this is where all my formatters are registered, my message handlers, and then I'm also setting up my IOC container inject. We've actually worked with a lot of IOC containers to make sure that Web API works well with those IOCs. We do meet with authors of some IOC containers on a regular basis. And you know, if you know of any issues with IOCs that you're using, definitely let us know. And then down here, I've got the config routes that are being initialized. So this is the same exact code that's being kicked off when ASP.NET is handling the hosting for my application. All right, so this is also a model that we'll be using for the RTM templates. So they'll be calling a class similar to this and then passing in HTTP configuration. And then after that, I new up an instance of the HTTP server. And then I new up an instance of HTTP client. But notice I'm actually passing in my HTTP server instance into the HTTP client. So if you remember that the screen that I had before with HTTP client and the message handlers, and then at the end was HTTP client handler, since I'm passing in my HTTP server, that's actually a message handler. And what I'm saying is, hey, don't use the default HTTP message handler. What I want you to do is use this message handler instead. So basically what that means is I can host Web API completely in memory. There's no outside requests happening. And this is ideal for unit testing, or if you wanted to, I could also show you self-hosting as well. It's just a little bit different than this. All right, so then I create my contact. Do a post. So what I'll do is I'll actually set a breakpoint inside my post method, and then we can see what happens when I start testing that. So I've got the Test Explorer here, and I think I've already got a breakpoint here, but okay, yes. Okay, cool. All right, let me go ahead and debug this guy. All right, so now it's kicking off. I'll just step through. I'll just do an F5. And now my post method gets kicked off. And then we can see, this is the same exact code that's being executed if I had just, published out my application and then served it. All right, so this is basically showing you how easy it is to host ASP.NET Web API in memory, and then how easy it is to actually test ASP.NET Web API. All right, cool. So actually what I'll do is let's take a look at hosting ASP.NET Web API inside a console project. So here I've got a new solution. Let me do Solution Explorer. You can see I've got a client and a self-host. So if I take a look at the self-host inside program, it's actually very simple. What it's doing is it's creating a new instance of the self-host configuration. So that's what you'll use if you want to self-host Web API. So this object actually has a very small amount of WCF inside of it that we use to take the request off of the wire, generate the HTTP request, and then and the responses, and pass it through. And then after that, I set up my HTTP route, and then finally open up the self-host server, and then it will just wait for any request that might come in. All right, so let me go ahead and start debugging this guy, and then we'll take a look at the client that we have. Oh, actually, just one second. Since I'm opening up a port, I have to actually run this as admin. So let me run it as admin. And then we'll try it one more time. All right, so self-host. All right, Solution Explorer. So we'll say debug, start new instance. Okay, so now We're ready to receive some requests. Oops, got the wrong solution open here. Yep. All right, so here we go. And now let's take a look at the client, which is going to make a request to this. All right. So actually, going back to the server, if I look at the products controller, this really just has some hard-coded values. So I've got a tomato soup, yo-yo, and hammer, and then get all products, product by ID, and then by category. And then the client will simply just execute these three methods. So here's the client. It'll set up the same base address, which is being used by the server, and then list all products, product by ID 1, and then any product in a particular category. So let me fire this guy off. All right, so here's our result. Tomato soup, yo-yo, hammer. Product ID 1 is tomato soup. Category 2, toys, is yo-yo. So let's talk about why might you want to self-host your ASP.NET Web API. So when you're going through ASP.NET to serve up your Web API, you're actually hooking into the ASP.NET pipeline. So if you're creating HTTP services and you're not interested in serving any web pages or any normal HTTP client or HTTP results for web pages, then if you self-host your web API, you actually will get a good performance gain because you'll remove ASP.NET pipeline out of the equation, and then you're just dealing with web API. And then obviously the other example would be if you wanted to host it in memory for unit testing, so on and so forth. All right, so now we're actually running out of time, but let's talk a little bit about what are the plans for Web API going forward. So we will ship with MVC 4. MVC as well as Web API are out of band. Everything is available not only for 4.5, but also we backported everything to 4.0. So you can use HTTP client and server on 4.0 today. We will be in the box for Visual Studio 2012. And you can get the, we are in the RC today. So we're actually, we've got 3 minutes left. Let me go ahead and wrap it up, and then I'll take a look at my Twitter feed and then just address questions on a one-on-one. So here's our summary. What we did was we used the ASP.NET Web API with MVC 4 to create a HTTP service. And this HTTP service could be used to actually reach a broad number of clients and different platforms, whether they be phones, tablets, websites. We saw that ASP.NET Web API is a great platform for building RESTful services. You can try out ASP.NET Web API in Visual Studio 2012 release candidate, and you can always follow our progress on CodePlex. I'll leave my contact information on the board, and if you guys fill out the evals, that would be greatly appreciated. And thanks for everybody that came out. I will be hanging out for questions. Thanks, everybody.